On the podcast today, we are going to dissect chapter 40 of the Tao Te Ching, which makes up the 40th episode of the 81 meditations on the Tao Te Ching. And as usual, Guyang will read Jia Fu Feng and Jane English's translation, and I will read Derek Lin's translation.
Returning is the motion of the Tao. Yielding is the way of the Tao. The 10,000 things arise from being. Being arises from not being.
The returning is the movement of the Tao. The weak is the utilization of the Tao. The myriad things of the world are born of being. Being is born of non-being. This is definitely probably one of the smallest chapters of the Tao Te Ching. We've just gone through 38 and 39, which are some of the longer verses of the Tao Te Ching. Yes, yes. And this is definitely a short chapter. A very interesting chapter, actually, and one that can be difficult for people to understand. But what I want to first say is, like, if we look at Taoist metaphysics, if we look at Uqi as the Tao and stillness as kind of the origin of creation, of the universe, of the physical reality that we experience, and then the movement out of Uqi is Tai Chi, which is Tao in motion, which then creates the manifest world, the 10,000 things. So you have this kind of movement out.
Yes.
And so part of the spiritual process for all of us is the movement back within. So is the reversal of the Tai Chi motion. So we reverse the Tai Chi motion to come more back into the stillness as the essence of Tao. And that's not to say that the Tai Chi reality of movement is an illusion. It's not. It's that the nature of creation itself is Uqi, is the origin of nothingness, of stillness. And so this whole chapter is kind of a mysterious chapter of this reversal of the motion of creation itself, how it is made. And it goes into this type of metaphysics, not just Taoism, but we also find this in Hinduism as well.
Yes. Sometimes the shorter the chapter is more things to talk about, or more like a mysterious meaning behind it, isn't it? So there's a deeper meaning that we are going to dissect here. Yeah, so this returning here, the first line it says, the returning is the motion of the Tao. Right? So returning is, I think, as important as going out, right? And once you go out, you gotta go back. Again, if you swing to the right, you need to swing to the left, and then come to the middle, right? So that's what's important here. So as you mentioned about the Uqi, so Uqi is that source of creation, right? So expanding and contracting, right? Again, the contracting is in here, it is returning. And the returning aspect is actually throughout the whole Tao Te Ching chapters, really. But in this chapter specifically, I think, talks about the creating aspect of the Tao, the creator, as a creator, actually. Mm. So Tao is what everything returns to, but at the same time, it also allows everything come to the existence, come to the being. So it is absolute non-being, like Uqi is completely empty and completely still. What's there? Nothing, really, the nothingness, the void. But also, it is the being itself. So when it comes to existence, when it materialized it, when it expanded. So it's a little bit like when Tao gives birth to 10,000 things, the Tao, so it's going out, expanding, so that something we could say the evolution aspect of creation. But and then 10,000 things have to return to Tao. So that is the involution idea. So that's how we can also talk about the source, the Tao as a source of creation.
Exactly. And even if we look at our own physical existence, right, we've all come into this world from a womb. We've been pushed out of our mother and we're here. And then from that, the life expands. Your life expands. And as you expand, your consciousness expands. And then your life becomes like a creative outlet for the Tao to express itself. we get caught in the subjectivity because we think we're doing everything, but it's doing us. And so, but we are that expression of the Tao, right? But what we get fearful of is that we can point to where we came from. I came from my mother. What was before that, and where that is there before that where you were going? Is that the return? You're returning to the source. And I think that's what frightens a lot of people, because, you know, the mystery of death. And I think people more so are fearful not about the physical dissolution of themselves, it's the egoic dissolution of themselves, the idea of themselves they can't really let go of, right? The jiva, the persona system that they're really fearful about. And so when you're on the spiritual path, it's a complete letting go of that jiva, and you're disintegrating that identity. And in doing that, that is the returning to the Tao. You are returning to the Tao in that instant moment. So that's the reversal. And, you know, when death comes, as Zhuangzi says, you will be ready. That's what it's all about. And so I find that cycle of life is magical, right? Like, we come from our mother. We don't really know our original face before our parents. So we have this genetic makeup based on them, which is the Jing. And then we still have the Shen, though, you know. We still have the spirit of nothingness within us, the spirit of Tao. And then we use the Qi to create and manifest what the Tao wants us to do in this world. In this case, it's each and every one of you listening and watching us now, and it's us two gibbering. So, but that's what it's all about, right? It's that act of the creative principle operating in the world. And as you said, the return is the motion of the Tao. You know, so that returning aspect is that real motion.
It's interesting, as you mentioned, the death. When I see a lot of people, that the older aged people, when they were younger, like, they weren't interested in any of this kind of knowledge or even religion itself, right? But as they get older and they get ill and whatnot, and they start to think a little bit deeply and a little bit differently about life and this world, right? And they turn to religion or the deep ancient knowledge, right? That is quite interesting. That is, again, the returning, the motion of Tao playing in individuals' life, right? If we come out of our mother's womb and we expand that, physically we also grow as well, of course. And then as we come to adulthood, we psychologically trying to expand, and we try to make career of something, or of course you will have your own interest, so that you actively go out and seek pleasure or experience and whatever you have, and you have that journey in life. And then later age, you start to question about your own being, like, I came this far, and where will I go after this point of my life, right? And then like, let's say things get serious.
Exactly. We're looking for then good explanations of existence, and that's where Taoism or Vedanta or Buddhism comes in, where they're good explanations of the nature of reality, nature of consciousness itself. So whereas there's other religions that tell you there's, you know, a Lord lording it over you, you're going back to them and so forth and so on. And okay, I don't think that really caters to the current world, because I think people are just naturally skeptical about those types of religions. But when you give like a sort of a spiritual scientific framework about consciousness, about the nature of evolution and involution, kind of what we're talking about here, it makes sense, right? And so it's purely natural for an old person to contemplate where they're going, right? And a lot of you may not know this, but we do have a lot of young listeners, and on my channel there are a lot of young people, but there are a lot of over 60s. And I think that's wonderful, to be honest with you. It's not anything negative. It's great. And actually, it's kind of what you and I expected a lot of the time, because mainly old people are interested in this sort of thing, where young people are out there grafting and working 9 to 5. And
yeah, they are too much like full of energy physically, right?
And a lot of chi to dispel.
Yes.
But once the chi is not accessible, when the jing is dwindling, the genetic blueprint, and you've still just left your shen is going, man, what is going on? Because the body is not functioning how it used to function.
Mm.
And we can take care of the body as well as possible, but that's another story. But anyway, this also relates to, like we were talking about, the evolution and the involution of the world, right? This cyclical pattern of the movement out and the movement back. In Hinduism, you have the time cycles of the yugas, right? So the yugas is this vast world age doctrine that covers like 8.4 billion years. And so you've got this process of this evolution, so the world of Brahma, yeah. And then you have this time of Vishnu, so this preservation, the sustainer of this current world that we exist. And then Shiva comes in and says, not this time.
Yes.
And then we go back into the source, whatever that may be, right? And so in Hinduism, they call this actually the breath of Brahma.
Mm.
So the evolution and the involution of Brahma, because Brahma is the creator, don't confuse us with the creator God, but the ultimate reality is Brahman. So Nirguna Brahman too, like the ultimate, unqualified, ultimate reality. Mm. And then so Brahma is just the creative aspect of the world. So that's why it's called the breath of Brahma, because Brahma brings the world back into existence. And apparently we've lived through so many different yugas, and then we think we're the only game in town. And so, but it's really interesting to think about, right? Because then you've got this vast world age doctrine of creation and then the deconstruction of the universe. But then if we look on a microcosmic level, that's us as an individual as well. So we have the Brahma aspect and then the Vishnu aspect and then eventually the Shiva aspect, which kind of begins, you know, I would say probably after 50 or after 60 maybe these days, because of the access of, you know, food and whatnot. There's, you know, life expectancy has gone up. And so you have these processes of change.
Mm.
And so what Lao Tzu is saying in this chapter again, like we were talking about in the previous chapter, is about not embracing change or yielding to change, but are mastering the change.
Mm.
So you're mastering these changing elements of your life.
Mm.
And look, maybe mastering or navigating the changing elements of your life is what you were talking about before. When you get older, it's like, well, we turn to some
religion
or something. Like maybe that is a way of mastering change, because it is a part of your life where you're going, wow, I could have 5 years, 10 years, 20 tops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what would I do if I only have 20 years left? Well, you'd want to know about the nature of existence itself, wouldn't you? Like, yeah,
absolutely. I wanted to just talk briefly about the Hindu aspect of that, the creator, preservation and destroyer thing. What's something beautiful and what I love about is that in South India and also parts of a northern part of India as well, they worship Shiva, right? And Shiva and the beautiful architecture of the Shiva Nataraj is the symbol of Shiva, the dance of Shiva. Again, the Shiva is representing the destroying aspect of universe, and people, mainly in India, people worship Shiva, right? Mm-hmm. Again, the place we love to be in is Arunachala. Again, the name Arunachala is the name of the mountain.
Yeah.
It's a representation of Shiva, Lingam, Shiva Lingam, yeah, right?
Natural Lingam.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So they worship the destroyer aspect of three different elements, right? So that's something super interesting. So that destroyer, in other words, we can say, again, the returning aspect.
Yep.
Because return implies that there is a going out again as well, right?
Yep.
Again, so the destroyer aspect, the same. Once it's been destroyed, what happens? The rebirth happens.
Mm-hmm.
So how important it is to understand that aspect of creation.
Exactly. And like in Shaivism, like the worshippers of Shiva, particularly in South India, and fire is an aspect, as you know. Fire is a an important symbol for Shiva, is that when you look at your spiritual path, right, what needs to be destroyed to understand the nature of Shiva? The nature of Shiva here is Brahman, right? Like, say, the destructive element from a spiritual perspective is you're destroying your personality, your ego. You're deconstructing it. And so Shaivism has always been more of an ascetic path as opposed to Vaishnavism, the worshippers of Shiva, which is far more cultural. So, like, when you think about Hinduism, a lot of people will think probably about the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, and, you know, and this is beautiful too, right? Like, but it's much more, and it kind of coincides with Vishnu, right? Because it's a sustaining the preservation of the Sanatana Dharma, of the culture, of Hinduism. Because that's important, right? We need to pass that down to further generations so they understand the nature of reality. You're not this jiva, right? But Shaivism is like, it's kind of like almost like another layer where it's like, it's great. Like, we need to preserve Sanatana Dharma, but at the same time, you need to embody the tenets of it. So the deconstruction of your identity.
Right.
You know, and this is where Shiva comes in. Shiva comes in probably as a cameo a little bit to Vishnu, but then sort of says, I'll take over from here, buddy. And then, and then it's the deconstruction of your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why fire symbolizes that, the burning away, right? And so that's why in Shaivism you see the Aghoris or the Sadhus and that. They wear the ash because ash symbolizes when everything is all burnt away.
Yes.
The nature of the world when it doesn't exist is ash. So, like, it means for them when they put ash on themselves that they are dead to the world as their ego. Their ego is dead to the world and they have merged in Brahman.
Mm.
So the point is, as you were talking about the returning, is that particularly with the Shaivas, is that they understand that we are ultimately Atman. Atman is identical with Brahman. And Atman is this undifferentiated consciousness. It's not really a soul, right? Our soul, we could say, is Jivatman. Jiva is the persona we've become, which is kind of entangled with the Atman. That's what comes back life after life after life. But once you dissolve the Jiva, because you know that the jiva is an expression of the expansion.
Yes.
Because you've come out of the world and as you're expanding, your mind is accumulating things. You build this personality that you think is real. But then it comes in conflict with the world and other jivas. And you think, well, something's not quite right here. And then you hear this knowledge that actually you're truly the Atman, this undifferentiated consciousness. And so the return is as you deconstruct the jiva, you naturally return, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the process of Shiva. This is a process of deconstruction. That's not to say that you can't find that in Vaishnavism, following Vishnu. Of course you can, through culture and through bhakti and these other things. But Shaivism is much more jnani. It's more based on wisdom and non-duality and so forth.
Yes, yeah, so like, path of Shaiva, jnani path, is to realize that now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of waiting to become 60s and 70s.
Yeah, of course, yeah. You're wasting your time.
Yeah. So, of course, that preservation aspect, again, I love that you need to celebrate life,
mm-hmm.
right? We need to appreciate this world.
Yeah.
And this the Maya is not like an illusion as in a negative sense.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, and that's why it's so colorful in Hindu culture,
yep.
to celebrate that aspect of life.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that we need to really cling to our jiva and believe in that this persona, the person that you play, actually.
Yep.
But ultimately, you want to be on the path of jnani, because the jnani path is to realize that you are Atman, that is Brahman, right now, the tatvamasi, that you are that, to realize now, and you live your life from that place, not from jiva's place.
No.
Right?
No.
Living in the, Atman's, with the Atman's eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate, to be there. But I like what you said about the celebration of life, because it's kind of like almost like they mutually almost arise with each other, both, like, because, like, as we know, like, sometimes if someone doesn't have any bhakti, any devotion, they can be, you know, like dry wood, you know. So you and I, we celebrate life. Like, we love our friends. We love everyone, you know what I mean? Like, we embrace the experiences we have and the opportunities that we have in life. But at the same time, we're mindful that the problem it can be is when you become attached to the celebration of life, because then you don't want to let go, you know. And the whole point of the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna is teaching Arjuna that even though that this is going on, nishkarma karma, you can't be attached to the fruits of your action, or you can't be attached to your life itself, is one of the deeper messages. So, and I think that that's a problem with a lot of people, that when they're on the deathbed, they may have had a very bright and passionate life, but then when the flame is going out, they're kind of a bit confused, like, man, it's been such a wild ride, but I don't want to really
let go,
you know. And so this is where Shaivism comes in and says, you need to have a bit of that. You have to have a bit of jnana in your life.
Yeah, then you kind of, even while you celebrate life, you can have a perspective of what that experience is. That experience is the beautiful experience that you are having in that moment, is what's happening in this physical body. But eventually, you actually are the spirit of Brahman that is experiencing. Not that from Jiva's place. No. Jiva's place, you would want to have that experience forever. You get attached to that pleasurable feeling, right? But from Atman's place, you understand that is momentary, but that is why it's even more beautiful, right? Okay. You really, really get marinated into that moment and get the every drop of the joy that you can get out of that moment, right? That's why it's beautiful. So when you understand that, when you come from that place, you can really take life a little bit more with the gratefulness.
And that's exactly like in line with Taoism, right? Because Lao Tzu is saying here that existence is great, but ultimately it comes from non-existence.
Exactly.
So it's all well and good that we have a great life, and who wouldn't want to, right? But if you're not mindful, or you haven't, as you said, if you don't see through Atman's eyes, you will have a life of suffering. You'll be attached to your life. You'll be attached to other people. You'll be attached to the world itself. And so when it's time to depart, that's when a lot of suffering occurs. That's where sadness occurs. And look, my heart goes out to those sorts of people for sure, right? But you have to understand that it ultimately comes from Uchi. It comes from Naguna Brahman. It comes from the undifferentiated consciousness. We don't really know what that is. It's undifferentiated. How could we know what it is? Because we are differentiated, right? But it ultimately comes from that, right? That's what the Tao does. The Tao comes from ultimately this empty source. And that's where creation actually comes from.
I think this returning aspect feels a bit more foreign and more difficult to relate to, is because happening, which is the evolution aspect, expansion aspect, is just seemingly happened without our kind of forcing. It just happened. Expanding aspect is just happening. Whereas the involution, that contracting, the returning aspect, is something that we need to a little bit more give a conscious effort to it, because when time comes to return, contraction happens, then it's kind of emotion is coming the other way around. So that's when you need to be a little bit more conscious of your life, so that it feels a little bit more unnatural to us. But again, the life is going that way. That is the motion of Tao.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So that returning is actually in some sense is more important for us to be conscious of.
Yeah, your life is like pretty much like a boomerang. You throw it out, you get to your peak, and you come back. It's just the way it is. I mean, if you fight the process,
yes,
that's where you're in trouble. You need to master change. And I remember Joseph Campbell said that. When he was talking about kind of that process, that 35 was like the top of the mountain, and then there's a long walk back down, you know, for whatever reason. It's shorter on this side of the hill and longer on this side of the hill.
It's getting that way.
So he was saying that tongue-in-cheek, obviously, but there is some truth to that, you know, like that is that boomerang effect the cycles that we need to navigate, right? And so we need to master change. We need to know how to handle the transitions of life.
Mm.
See, when you were saying about the older people, that's a transition of life. They're at a certain point in time where they're like, well, look, I've done all this. I mean, I've got all the money in the world. I've accomplished everything. But like, really, what now? You know, really, what now? And if you're younger and you've come across this knowledge, like you and I, then your life is basically finished from a young age. But there is no probably accomplishment in this and that. But you're on the path a bit earlier than, say, someone who has accomplished a lot in their life.
Right.
And so when we look at this in total, like when we look at this cycle, we need to be mindful always that just things don't last in general, right? Life is in constant transition. And so we are navigating these transformations of life. And so it's important, as Lao Tzu said, like to kind of like stay steady. Like don't be blown here or there by the changing tides of life. But, you know, move gracefully with them, right? Move gracefully with them. And the fact of the matter is that the spiritually strong will survive, right? The spiritually strong know that things get better
mm-hmm.
because, you know, that essentially that time is coming. That's what cycles are, right? You go through cycles in your own life where people get upset about, where they think, why me, why this, why that? But then if you're spiritually strong, you know deep down that, look, this won't last. This is probably a pain in the butt right now, but it won't last and things will get better. And so when you stay spiritually strong and you live with these principles that we often talk about, then when those times come, you can celebrate life, right? But when the times are in a kind of in the trough of the valley, do you master change? You know how to navigate that time because you've been there before.
Yeah.
And you know just deep down that the good times will come.
Yes.
And so I think that that's what a lot of us have to think, right? Like a lot of us, it doesn't mean that you become a sheep and you submit to authority. I mean, Lao Tzu would completely disregard that because he didn't give in to Confucianism. But it's just that you stay strong, you know, you stay true to the Tao and you don't stay true to what society and culture want you to think.
Mm.
You stay true to the Tao, you live with principles, you navigate change, you know that everything comes from non-being, non-existence. So everything that is created will essentially be destroyed. Ideas, ideologies, thoughts even in your mind will come and go.
Staying spiritually strong means that having that awareness of life, isn't it?
Yep.
Awareness of life, of yourself and the world and nature in just in general. As in, again, awareness as in a little bit deeper level here as well. Just being conscious of what's really happening.
Yeah.
So that even if you're going through a bit of a dip, again, like when it goes out, it'll come back. So it's the same principle.
Yeah.
And you that dip is not going to last forever. And you just wait for that time and you just gotta be endure that moment.
Yes.
With the resilience.
This is what vairagya is, right? In Sanskrit, vairagya is like dispassion for worldly things, or dispassion, or having no attachment to the transformations. So you know that good times come, bad times come, but you're always sort of a witness to all of this. You observe these transformations, and as Zhuangzi said, when you're ready to die, or when death comes, you will be ready.
Yeah.
And so that's the type of level we need to get to in our own life personally. But we can't do that if we are attached to the life that we have, the people around us. I mean, overly attached. I mean, you don't want to exaggerate that, right? Like Lao Tzu doesn't exaggerate. A lot of people do exaggerate these texts in English because they don't actually read the actual Chinese.
Mm.
And so the English can actually exaggerate the actual meaning. But so you don't want to overly attach to your life, overly attach to the people around you. You want to celebrate your life. But as you said, you eventually need to see through the eyes of Atman.
Yeah.
Essentially, you need to become a vessel of the Tao. Guys, we hope you enjoyed and we'll see you guys next time.